The Women's Hoop Show, a podcast hosted by me, Jordan Robinson, brings you fresh women's basketball voices and breakdowns every week. I'll be joined by hoop experts all year long. Find the Women's Hoop Show on the free Odyssey app or wherever you get your podcasts.
Welcome back, folks. We know that the Saints are playing the Chargers on Sunday, August the 10th at 3:05 p.m. out there on the West Coast. And the team is already out there in Irvine, California. We'll be out there for a while. And our own Jeff Nowak is out there as well. He's the WWL Saints sideline reporter and digital content producer. Jeff, welcome to the show.
Hey, Newell. Thanks for having me.
10 a.m. out there. I hope it's cooler out there than what it is here.
A little bit. I'm gonna try not to brag too much, but it's nice. The weather's nice out here. It's kind of what they do best. But we'll have another 4 p.m. practice today. They're gonna have a scrimmage today, so it'll be a little more interesting than your average practice.
So what's the typical schedule been like for the team out there in Irvine?
Yeah, so this is different than what last year we were out here. They practiced from like 9 to 11 every day. You can really practice at any point. You know, when in Metairie, you have to kind of work around where you don't want to practice in the middle of the day because it's so hot here. You could really do whatever you want. They decided that the schedule they liked the most is, hey, they're going to do some install. They're going to do meetings in the morning. They're going to do a walkthrough. And then the last thing they do of the day is practice. So normally you would have the morning practice and then, you know, they would get a break for however long, then they'd have meetings and then it would go throughout the day. In this case, I think their goal was, okay, we're going to finish practice at 6 p.m. and then that's it. And then the focus becomes, hey, players can do their own thing. They can, you know, do whatever team bonding they want to get done. The veterans are kind of leading their position groups, which is just kind of a different take. And we've seen Kellen Moore kind of find ways to put his own stamp on things. And I think that's just another example of that.
There's been a lot of chatter about the players actually liking the way that the schedule has worked out.
Yeah, it sounds like, you know, it's not just the schedule, it's the kind of intentionality of it. You know, I think one thing when you play in the league for a while, players get very attuned to not wanting to have their time wasted, you know, particularly the veteran players. And I think they've all really appreciated how things have been set up. There's a big focus on kind of rest and recovery. You know, they're not just kind of standing around waiting for things to happen. There are breaks. They can get treatment done. We've heard from several players, you know, throughout camp that, you know, they're feeling the best they ever have. You know, Juwan Johnson said that. Devon Godshaw said that. Eric McCoy said that. You know, you just go down the list. I think the players are bought in. That only goes so far, you know, until the games start. They got to deliver on the field. You know, you need guys to stay healthy on the field as well. But, you know, early returns certainly seem good.
So they will practice, obviously, today. I guess they're off tomorrow and then in preparation for the Sunday's game.
Yeah, they'll have a scrimmage today, which is a little unusual because, you know, you have a game on Sunday. They didn't do joint practices this week. This is kind of going to serve as their de facto joint practice, right? I think you're going to end up seeing players in this scrimmage that you won't see on Sunday. Alvin Kamara, for example, he'll be active today. He will not be active on Sunday. I think there's going to be a few players like that. So, you know, it's just kind of a more controlled way to get competitive reps for some guys who you don't need to see in the preseason game. Right. So, you know, it's going to be interesting to see how they manage that. But otherwise, you know, it's just a situation where you want to make sure you are in the best possible situation going into what is a very important game for certain members of this roster, right? Like it's not the preseason opener is not going to mean the same thing for everyone in the quarterback competition. Like, I think this is a massively important game for a Tyler Shuck to go out there and kind of force coaches to sit up and be like, he could start week one, right? Like, I don't think anyone's quitting on Tyler Shuck regardless of what happens in this preseason game. But if he goes out there and looks like a guy that you'd be comfortable playing, then suddenly I think that conversation becomes a lot more interesting. If he goes out there and looks like a rookie, then I think, you know, you get really close to to kind of saying, hey, we can cut this thing off early. So, you know, this is going to be an important weekend for a lot of guys.
In reality, how many positions do we have that level of competition actually going on from your perspective?
Yeah, for starting roles, not a ton. You know, obviously quarterback, the offensive line is pretty much set in stone. You know, I think outside corner is interesting. Ike Yiadom and Quincy Riley is going to be kind of a position battle. It's going to be another example of, hey, does the rookie look good enough to start him? Are you more comfortable with a veteran? You know, the back end safety duo, Julian Blackman, Justin Reed, that's pretty much set in stone. The linebackers, Pete Warner, DeMario Davis, that's pretty much set in stone. Wide receivers, you feel pretty comfortable with. On the other side of the ball, I mean, the defensive line is probably the most interesting position because you have, you know, you have a lot of players who are adapting to a new scheme that haven't really done it before, like a Cam Jordan, Carl Granderson, Chase Young. You have them kind of playing that outside linebacker role. And then you have players that have been brought in who have that skill set. You know, we talked to Chris Rumpf yesterday. He's a guy that not a lot of Saints players will have heard of, but I expect we'll have a lot of big moments on Sunday because he's going to get a ton of reps. And people are going to be like, wow, this guy can play. And I think it's going to be interesting to see how they manage that, right? Because you have the bigger names, the higher profile names, but then you have names like Chris Rumpf and Dasheen Davis and Fadil Diggs, guys that were brought in specifically to run Brandon Staley's scheme and honestly might be better fits for it than some of the depth guys we're used to. So I think it's more about that. It's more about seeing how the players, especially on the defensive side of the ball, are picking up the scheme and look like they can play within it. So that's more what I'm looking for. I want to see comfortability within the new offenses. I want to see the offensive line taking steps forward. And, you know, there are those obvious positions where it's a position battle. But at the same time, I do think that with the new kind of paradigm of this coaching staff, you can see established players maybe getting pushed more than we've seen in the past.
Interesting. At the receiver core on offense, any really serious or significant competition going on there? I think they have a couple of rookies that have come in that are speedsters, right?
Yeah, wide receiver is kind of interesting because you have Chris Olave and Rashid Shaheed, and you feel really good about him. But there's obviously health concerns with Chris Olave. He did seem to kind of tweak his ankle a little bit during yesterday's practice. He finished out the day. It'll be something to watch. I'm curious to see how much they try to get those guys out there. My issue more with the wide receiver room is that I think it's very kind of, you know, the skill sets are not very varied in that. You know, you talk about kind of a basketball lineup where you could have tall guys, right. You have short guys, you have fast guys, you have strong guys. In this case, you got a bunch of fast guys. And I think you can use that in certain instances, but you really would like to see someone kind of step forward and play a physical brand of receiver. Because otherwise you're going to be very limited if all you can do is try to throw go routes and, you know, throw to guys who are wide open. Like, I want to see guys fighting for the ball. And I think the first guy we see to step forward and really excel in that part of the game, I think he's going to have a roster spot. So we'll have to see. Because I don't think anyone has questions about what Rashid Shaheed, what Chris Olave can do in the way they play the game. I just think that, you know, you want guys who can do specific things. You want guys who you can trust to go over the middle of the field and make a catch in traffic. And I just haven't seen that right now. So, you know, Keenan Allen side with the Chargers, that pipe dream is gone. You're not bringing a guy like him in to kind of fill that role. So I think that's really more what it is I need guys to step in and make difficult catches over the middle of the field. And whoever does that, I think is going to make themselves a name really quickly.
Jeff, there's some, you know, offensive coordinator types, and I'm not sure how our head coach's strategy was with the Eagles, that kind of have a set group of receivers and they kind of stick with them for the vast majority of the game. It's not as much situational. What has been his, you know, kind of his style?
Yeah, I think you're going to rely more on, you know, it's funny because it's not so much about, okay, you know, how many receivers do you have? It's how many do you roster on a game day? Like, how many do you go into a game with? You have four or five? Are those bottom two more special teams guys that don't really see the field in that way? And I think you are going to probably want to keep, you know, in most seasons you might keep three running backs. I think you have a deeper running back room this year with some varied skill sets. So you might keep four, maybe throw another one or two on the practice squad. And I think you're going to utilize that group in the passing game a lot. You're going to use the tight ends in the passing game a lot with Juwan Johnson. So I don't think you're going to see a ton of, you know, three wide receiver sets. I think you're going to see a lot more two tight end looks, two running back looks with two wide receivers on the field. I don't think it's going to be a situation where you have this kind of massive rotation of wide receivers and you're just seeing different guys on the field constantly. I think you do need the guys on the field to be able to do, varied things. We're going to see a lot of run game. We're going to see a lot of heavy personnel. So that might help solve some of the wide receiver questions.
Yeah, I was just kind of curious because we were kind of used to, five different receivers being used out on the field, from play to play almost, right?
Yeah, and I think that's, when you have a veteran quarterback that you can trust to be able to navigate pressure, it's a lot easier to do that, to go kind of five out. And you could just, Drew Brees was the master of being able to manipulate defenses, and he could always, he knew where the blitz was coming before the defense knew where the blitz was blitzing from, right? So you can trust a guy like that. With a young player, you're going to see a lot more max protection. You're going to see a lot more of the running back staying in to pick up blitzes. You're going to see, tight ends chipping and getting out just to give that guy a little bit more time. You're also going to see a lot more QB run game, which is going to eliminate that a little bit. Like, you're going to have zone reads. You're going to see designed runs. Especially early in the season, I wouldn't go into a game expecting to see kind of a wide open offense, right? I think you're going to see a lot of safe calls, setting up third and short, and staying above in front of the chains as much as possible. Not going to be the most exciting brand of football ever, but I think the goal early on in this season, especially in the preseason, is going to be playing winning football, playing a brand of offensive football that you can win with, and that's going to be positive plays on first and second down, third and manageable. Take your shots where you can because you do have the speedsters. You do have Chris Olave and Rashid Shaheed, so when they kind of compress and try to take that away, you can hit them over the top. But it's not going to be the 2015 Sean Payton up and down the field type offense that Saints fans might be hoping for.
I don't know about you, but that quarterback run game makes me nervous. He had the beneficiary of a great body style quarterback at Philadelphia, for that type of option being available to you. I don't know that we have that on this roster. Do you?
No, you're going to have to be careful with how you use it, right? Like, I don't think it's going to be like a Taysom Hill-style run game where you're running QB power and you're like, oh, he can run through that guy. It's going to be more, hey, are they not respecting it, right? Are they not defending it?
Yeah.
And can you get a free 5 to 10 yards on a zone read keeper because they're just crashing down on Alvin Kamara because they're going to say, hey, we'll take away Alvin, and if they beat us with the QB's legs, then so be it. Well, you do have a couple quarterbacks now in Rattler and Shuck that, and even Hayner, he can move when he needs to.
That
you can get some of those kind of chunk yardages. And I think the coaching point has to be get what you can get and then get down or get out of bounds. Like, we do not need the quarterback fighting for extra yards over the middle of the field unless it's third down and we desperately need it, or fourth down and we desperately need it. Like, if you get a first down, find the closest opportunity to get off the highway and we'll reset and go from there. You don't need a 50-yard gain from the quarterback when a 20-yard gain safely will do. So I think that's kind of where you're going to be at with it, is you're going to be judicious, but you are going to want to keep the defense honest. And I think, anyone who's been out of camp can see that, Tyler Shuck's legs are a weapon, and you just got to use it the right way. Like, I don't see him as a scrambler. He's not a guy who's going to dance around in the backfield like a Lamar Jackson type. But when you get him in a straight line, he can outrun some people. He's quick. So I think that is going to catch some people by surprise early in his career, because we've seen to this point, it has been kind of a way to settle him in early in drives. As you get kind of that first zone read, he can stretch the defense to the edge of the field and then make a decision. And it does seem like it has been settling him in a little bit throughout the course of his early kind of training camp run.
And we don't need him doing the high hurdles out there either, right?
No. Stay close to the ground.
Keep both feet on the ground and get out of bounds.
Yeah.
So Sunday, What can we expect of, I would assume Rattler's starting, and how long will he be in for, do you think?
Yeah, we'll see. We'll see what Kellen is willing to divulge today. I've always find it funny when coaches are coy about their preseason plans. Like, what are you trying to protect? Like, just tell us who started our guy. But he did say that they were going to talk about that yesterday after practice. The coaches were going to sit down. So I imagine that a decision has been made today. It's going to be communicated to the players. I think you're going to see a good bit of the starters, probably more than we'd typically see in a preseason opener, just because of the situation and because you're going to want to get both guys first team reps. And you're not going to, you know, if your starter is out there, you don't want to have your starter playing behind the second team offensive line.
Right.
And if you are truly in a quarterback competition and you have not decided who the starter is going to be, then you have to at least give both of these guys some run. So I kind of feel like you're going to, I don't think you're going to alternate. I think you're probably going to give one guy either one series if it's extended, or two series if it's like a three and out. And then you're going to switch, maybe give that, and then that give that second guy one series with the first team, and then go from there. I think it's going to be a situation where you probably see a lot of Jake Haener in the second half. So I think the primary work you're going to get done is going to be first quarter, probably first half of the second quarter, and we're going to start to get a picture of exactly where this offense is relative to an opposing NFL defense, not the guys on your own roster who aren't hitting you.
Well, thank you so much for joining us. We really appreciate it. Stay cool out there and bring home a win. Jeff Nowak, WWL Saints sideline reporter and digital content producer. Have a great weekend.
Sounds good, Neil. Thanks.
Thank you. We'll be right back, folks. Stay with us.
The Women's Hoop Show, a podcast hosted by me, Jordan Robinson, brings you fresh women's basketball voices and breakdowns every week. I'll be joined by hoop experts all year long. Find the Women's Hoop Show on the free Odyssey app or wherever you get your podcasts.
Welcome back, folks. If you're looking for something different and fun to do, I've actually been out there. I've never participated, but I've seen people walking, skipping, dancing, crawling, even a few people running in a 2-mile event called the Red Dress Run. And Bill Healy, the Red Dress Run leader and spokesman, is here with us now. Bill, welcome to the show.
Well, thank you so much, Noel. Thanks for having me on.
Bill, you know, some years there are more people crawling than there are running or walking or skipping.
Between the beer and the heat in August, you're not wrong.
But, it's funny when you're down there. I mean, it's just you see so many people with red dresses on. It seems like a half a million people, because you can see the red dress from 3 blocks away, right?
Absolutely. And, the funny thing is it started with fewer than 100 people just in our local running club. And it's just New Orleans is just, it's the right kind of town to embrace an event like this. And it's exploded.
100% of the proceeds goes to, charitable organizations. You got a lot of folks, that are involved. So tell us about what we can expect tomorrow.
Okay. So, first thing, we've kind of moving back to our roots. We used to have the event at Armstrong Park, and I guess about 10 years ago, we moved it to Crescent Park. Well, this year we're back at Armstrong. Things just didn't work out where we were able to return to Crescent Park because of the sale of the park and just different logistical things. And we've gotten overwhelming support. People really enjoy doing the event at Armstrong. So I think it's working out well for everybody. But schedule-wise, it's pretty much exactly the same as it's always been. We tap the kegs at 9 a.m. The DJ starts playing music around 9 a.m. We line folks up, and we start the quote-unquote run at 10:15. And by about noon, we're serving lunch. The live music starts. And this year, we're fortunate enough to have Cowboy Mouth as our headliner. We also have the Crescent Kings playing. So there'll be plenty of food, plenty of beer, and plenty of live music throughout the afternoon. And then when it's all said and done, we count up all the money and give it all away.
So the event's going to will start and end at Armstrong Park, correct?
That's correct. We're going to start right in front of the park. And as you know, the route, every year the route is top secret. We don't really post where the route is, but you know where we're going to end. So if you know where Armstrong Park is, you can find your way back to the finish. And we'll even announce you as the winner if you like.
I've been down there on the day of Red Josh Run for lunch in multiple different restaurants, right? And there's people, I think people have their own, run that they have where they
sure.
visit certain bars and stuff, and they end up back at Crescent Park, but they have their own course. That's the word I'm looking for. Oh my God, I couldn't get it out. But they have their own course that they set up every year because you're going to see them all over the place.
And bar.
Yeah.
Well, if you're going to be down there tomorrow, we'd love to have you come out in a red dress and you could start the run for us.
Well,
we'd love
that. Let me tell you something, Bill. So Mel Dussel, the Dawn Busters Kiwanis, he's been after me to join the organization. So he sends me a text about having you to come on the show. And so I sent him a text, give me a call, I want to talk to you. Well, he hadn't called me, and I already got my dress, but I said I'm not gonna do it unless Mel calls me. But he hadn't called. So maybe you could get him.
You can bet. When I hang up, that's going to be the first person I call.
And I would be happy to participate tomorrow morning because I did order a dress. So
I am absolutely going to call Mel because we would love to have you as our official starter. That would make my year.
Well, you can count on it. I'll be there then with red dress on. Red dress on, and who
I'm
going
to hold
else.
You to that. That's fantastic. You know,
it's just a
Dawn
great event.
Absolutely.
Go ahead. I'm sorry, I lost you. Go ahead.
I'm sorry. I said without the Dawn Busters and the other volunteer organizations, we couldn't do the event. We have well over 100 volunteers that help us with everything from registration to security to pouring beer, anything you can think of that needs to happen. We've got some volunteers that every year they step up and help us out, and we really appreciate it. We throw a large party where we give out the grants and we invite all the volunteers, and it's just great to every year in, year out, just to reconnect with those folks. And it's a great, great feeling.
Well, I know, Bill, that you are a risk taker because you've got Mel Dussel in charge of the beer kegs. And
you obviously know him well.
He's been a good friend for a long, long time. That organization and so many others that are involved with your organization, without them, we would truly be less than in our community, and not only in the city, but through greater New Orleans area. I mean, it's just incredible some of the work they do. And I did not know that he was involved with this until he called me this year. And that's why I said, well, I'll do it. if he gives me a call, but I'm going to do it for you either way. So I'll be there in the morning.
That is wonderful. I'll let everyone know and be prepared for autographs.
So 9 a.m., the tap starts, 10:15, the race starts, and at noon they start serving food. The bands start kicking it up. We have Cowboy Mouth and who else?
And the Crescent Kings.
And the Crescent Kings. Now, a lot of people don't actually register for the run, but that's how you're able to give the money to the charity. And so how much is it to register?
It's $89 right now. It starts out a little less, and what we do is it goes up $5 or $10 a month. So right now it's $89 to register. And, once we pay for the beer, pay for the food and the food and the bands, then 100% of everything we make, goes to nonprofits. And it's kind of an interesting way that we do it. We open up the grant application for the month of September, and we get hundreds of requests for grants. And we go through them and make sure that they've met all the criteria that we have posted on the website at NOH3.com. And then we vote on the different grant applications. And once we have a list of the local nonprofits that we're going to help, then we take however much money we have left over and we divide it evenly.
And you can register early online where?
NOH3.com. That's NOH3. Stands for New Orleans Hash House Harriers, which is our super secret club.
NOH, the number 3.com?
Correct. Yes, sir.
And you can register there as well in the morning, right?
Yep, you can either register the morning of the event out at Armstrong, or you could come visit us this evening at Deutsch's house. We have our expo where people are coming to pick up their numbers and things like that, and we have open registration right there. You can register on your phone on your way to the expo, pick up your stuff, and have a beer with me. So,
all right.
And, we'd love
and
to have everybody.
What time does that start at Deutsch's house this evening?
4 o'clock.
4 o'clock.
And we'll run through, I believe we're running expo through 8:30. So if you've already registered, come on by, grab your number, have a few beers, maybe buy some what we call haberdashery, which is basically just goofy clothes that have our logo on it.
I love it. All right, I'll see you in the morning. Bill Healy, Red Dress Run leader and spokesperson, 9 a.m., the beer starts flowing, 10:15 a.m. start, noon, band and food at Armstrong Park. Thank you so much for joining us, Bill.
Thank you.
We'll see you tomorrow. All right, guys, we'll be right back. 504-260-1870. We can talk about anything you'd like to talk about when we return. Give us a shout. This is Newell on WWL.
I'm Jordan Robinson, host of the new podcast, The Women's Hoop Show. Each episode, I'll be joined by a rotating group of women's basketball experts to talk WNBA, college hoops, the new Unrivaled League, and the shifting landscape of the sport. The game is growing, and so are we. Listen to and follow The Women's Hoop Show and Odyssey Podcast, available now for free on the Odyssey app or wherever you get your podcasts.
Welcome back, folks. Well, this could be trouble. The guy that I said that needed to call me is actually on the line, Mel, from the Kiwanis Stardust organization. I don't know. You tell me. I left you a message and said, give me a call. I want to talk.
Well, I got my nephew called me. I was on the radio waiting for Bill to get on, and I never heard him. I said, I got to go take a shower. So I jumped in the shower, and my nephew called and said, Uncle Mel, Lou's waiting for you. So, and then I heard, I just missed Bill. So here's my question to you, my friend, okay, because I missed the interview. Are you coming out in your red dress, and are you going to be at the starter?
I am going to be there in the morning with the red dress on for you, my friend.
That is awesome. Because of that, I'm not even going to ask you to join Dawn Busters today. Only today, though. I am going to ask tomorrow. Hey man, it's unbelievable. This group is phenomenal. We've been working with them for 20 something years. Bill Healy's one of my great friends, but they're members of our club. We're members of their club, and it's the largest red dress run in the world. They're the only red dress run that gives money back to the community. And thanks to people like you, the word gets out. But boy, I wish more people would pay and come to the event so they could give more money out to charity. That's what it's all about. But I cannot wait to see the sheriff of Jefferson Parish, the ex-sheriff of Jefferson Parish, in a red dress. Buddy D must be smiling from heaven.
I was just reading an article, too, that a group of Newman High School football players were shopping for their red dress, and they're going to be out there. It looked like they were having a blast doing so. So it's just good fun.
Well,
right?
What happens is that high school kids and college kids, they go into the quarter. To come into the red dress itself, you have to be 21 because of the alcohol. But you can be under that to go. But you can be under that to go into the city. But Cowboy Mouth is going to be the starting band tomorrow. And hey man, you're going to be right there. So walk in and come and see. I'm going to come out and see you, of course. Because I handle all of I'm in charge of all the beer tomorrow. Can you imagine that?
I can't imagine that.
I told all the beer.
I told Bill he is a risk taker, putting you in charge of the beer for sure.
Well, Mel, come out and see us at Dorch's house today, man.
I might do that, actually. I got to check with the boss, right, and see if
I understand that.
And we'll find out if we can do that. Look forward to it. And we'll see you in the morning, Mel.
Thank you, man. Appreciate you, buddy. Okay.
All right, let's go to Frank. Frank, you're up. What say you?
Good afternoon.
How are you today?
Look, you really caught my interest this morning talking about the Gaza Strip and Israel and everything. My godchild, a good friend of mine's son, is home on leave from being a /mercenary contractor, ex-Delta. And I can't get him right now, but I'm trying to get him to get go on the show and talk to you. But the things he told me match up better than what you're saying. He's telling me that 96% of the stuff is taken by Hamas and that the UN is nothing over there. They're no help. They're pitiful. And the only reason why they don't get attacked when they go out is because they got American flags on their convoy and the bad guys know who they are and know if they get hit, the master and the White House will take care of them. And he said that gives them great peace of mind. Now, that's not to say they haven't gotten people hurt or hit.
Right.
But I am trying to get a hold of him right now. He's in the city, and I'm definitely trying to get him to talk to you. But I can tell you, when you said that this morning, because I just had dinner with him last night, it was an eye-opener. He was a Ranger, went to Delta Team, and in the last 2 years of Biden's administration, he got out because of the wokeness. They could not handle the wokeness no more.
You know, that's a shame, and it's a shame of all the game playing that's going on over there, because people are suffering, and it doesn't need to happen, and we ought to be able to put all of this aside and play by the rules and get them the aid that they need. Frank, thank you so much for the call. Appreciate it.
All right,
let us know.
Bye-bye.
I would love to talk to your family member. Let's go to Irvin. Irvin, you're up. What say you?
Hey, happy Friday. Want to make some comparisons between Huey Pierce Long and President Donald Trump. Some of these things are undeniable. First of all, both men were populist. Both of them have gigantic egos. And both of them seem to feel like they were above the law. Now, before I get into Huey P. Long, I do want to mark a contrast that Huey P. Long was more an advocate for the poor. He had to spread the wealth program where he wanted to bring money to the people, basically going after Standard Oil in Baton Rouge. He had a logo, a chicken in every pot, which doesn't mean much to us today, but for poor folks back then, that was a dream to have a chicken every night in the pot to eat. Going back to Huey Long, to show how he breaks the law, when he was elected senator, he remained governor of the state for almost a year. And this was against all laws and protocols, but he managed to do it because he controlled the legislature. When he finally got pushed out to go be a senator, because he wanted to keep his hands in Baton Rouge and D.C., he appointed Oscar K. Allen, basically a puppet governor, once he left. Little by little, the legislature grew enough confidence to impeach him like they've done to Donald Trump. And the only problem was the Speaker of the House, John Furrier, was loyal to Long. So he bent rules, kind of like the Speaker of the House we have right now in D.C. He bent some rules so that they couldn't do the vote to impeach him. And he basically shut down the chamber. Now, Huey P. Long, knowing that this had been done, kind of like Donald Trump, he went hog wild after all the opponents. You know, he made sure he put up candidates against them in the next election. He looked for their friends and families and made sure they were fired from government positions in Louisiana. And then finally, of course, Long had created so many enemies that he was assassinated. Of course, Carl Weiss was the son-in-law of a judge that Long was removing from office, so that finally met his end. But I just think the comparisons between the two are such that it's undeniable. You know, they're both populist, they both had gigantic egos, but most importantly that we have to watch with Mr. Trump, they both thought they were above the law and rules. I'll give it to you.
I don't agree with everything that you say. I do believe that there is a lot of similarities with folks that have a leaning view. A lot of what Donald Trump does from a policy perspective, I agree with. The manner in which he implements and executes on that policy, I don't necessarily agree with. And I think that's where he kind of runs afoul. And it's where Huey Long ran afoul, actually, on a lot of what he was doing. I do see some of those similarities. Going after your political enemies is nothing new. Joe Biden did it. Barack Obama did it. They all do it. The Bushes did it. The Clintons did it, for sure. So that's not something new. I think Donald Trump is more willing to talk about it in an overt way. And actually, he's a much more transparent president than most, because you actually know what he's thinking. He doesn't hide it. And he doesn't make excuses for it. Not to say that that makes me agree with him anymore, but what you see is what you get, and you kind of know where he's going. He doesn't really blindside many people. He tells you when he's coming. So, I mean, you know, there's something to be said for that, which is not the traditional way of handling things politically. It's typically more covert, more surreptitious in the way that it plays itself out. And that's why a lot of cases people don't realize just how retaliatory some of these other folks that were president truly were. But thank you for the call, Irvin. Have a great weekend. We will be right back. We'll check in with Scoot when we return. Stay with us. Well, folks, I don't know about you. I'm excited about the first Saints game being on Sunday. Kind of get into that football regiment for the weekend. Scoot joins us, and I know Scoot will be watching the game on Sunday as well. What do we have coming up,
Scoot? But come on, Newell. You're really looking forward to the red dress run. I mean, I know that. You got your red dress is all laid out on the bed. It's all laid out on your bed. You can't wait to put it on.
Trying to figure out the makeup and all that other stuff.
It's so confusing. Well, you might ask Christine Noem. She knows a lot about that.
Yeah.
All right, so we'll talk about her reaction to South Park. The White House has reacted to South Park. They're also not being honest about South Park. We'll set the record straight on that. And we'll talk about the Saints, and we'll talk about the red dress run. All of that coming up on the show. Have a great weekend.
You too, my friend. Stay tuned, folks. Scoot's headed your way with a great lineup. Hope you enjoyed today's show. Have a great weekend. Go Saints. We'll see you Monday.
I'm Jordan Robinson, host of the new podcast, The Women's Hoop Show. Each episode, I'll be joined by a rotating group of women's basketball experts to talk WNBA, college hoops, the new Unrivaled League, and the shifting landscape of the sport. The game is growing, and so are we. Listen to and follow The Women's Hoop Show and Odyssey Podcast, available now for free on the Odyssey app or wherever you get your podcasts.